What is up, QBless family? Welcome back to another episode of Ball Street, the QBL Stock Exchange. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with analyst Chris Helly. Chris, another awesome week of football. Hopefully another awesome week of fantasy football for you. How'd things go this week?
Yeah, a little bit of a mixed bag. Won in some places like our Prodigy League that I needed to, and lost some other ones that were in leagues I'm on the bubble or feeling a little bit more comfortable in. So mixed bag, but generally okay with it. What about you?
Things went well. Things went well for me. I did have Pat Mahomes on bye, and Rashi Rice in several places as well. But was able to get a couple of big wins in a couple leagues that matter a lot financially. Was able to advance in kind of an elimination style league to the final round. It went from 130 down to 40 after 5 weeks, and after 10 weeks it went from 40 down to 10. So I'm in the final 10. Top three make the money, so we'll see how it goes. But very excited about that as well. So good week for me. Hopefully we can keep the momentum rolling into week 11 now. Can you believe that?
Yeah, it's flying by. Congrats and good luck in that one.
I'll certainly need it. It feels there was a significant talent disparity between the first round and the second round. I have a feeling it's going to be a significant talent disparity between the second round and the final round as well. So we'll see. Drafts tomorrow night. We're redrafting completely, so we'll see how it goes. Let's jump right into injuries. We've got a lot to go over. A lot of things happened this week. Some injury news, especially at quarterback. We'll start with Kyler Murray. He gets placed on the IR. Jacoby Brissett, unofficially, officially, doesn't matter. He's the starter in Arizona now. I feel like this might be a boost for the pass catchers in the desert. What are your thoughts?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we talked about it last week, how the offense just actually functions with Jacoby under center. I definitely think it's a bump. It's just the only fear with this is the upcoming schedule looks like it's about to get a lot tougher. So, you know, it's good thing for Arizona fans. And I think for fantasy managers, you're kind of ready to brace the storm or maybe willing to cash out.
Yeah, it's going to be a gauntlet down the stretch for the Cardinals. And we'll see. Frankly, I'm curious to see whether Gannon keeps his job as the head coach or not, because that's a big question mark there as well. Mm-hmm. Speaking of head coaches, we move to the New York Giants. Jackson Dart leaves the game with a concussion. And not long after, the Giants surrender their fourth quarter lead, another 10-point lead. I saw a stat tweeted by Adam Schefter that the Giants are now 0-4 when they have a 10-point fourth quarter lead on the road this year or something absolutely bonkers like that. And of course, you know, Monday morning, or was it Tuesday? Either way, early in the week, Brian Daboll hit the curb, buddy. You're out of here. Giants fire him. They name their offensive coordinator the interim head coach. Sounds like not too much is going to change in the short term. Of course, we need to monitor Dart's status with the concussion protocol this week.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation with the Daboll firing, is because, you know, and having those 10-point leads on the road, because it's like, I mean, do you give them credit for being in the lead on the road at that point, or do you like blame him for having blown it? But, you know, you look at this team and they just lost their quarterback in this last game. You lost Malik Nabers for the year. You lost your super explosive running back, Cam Scadabo. So, you know, it seems a little short-sighted to put the blame on Daboll, but I digress. That's, you know, I'm an Eagles fan, so maybe I'm a little biased there.
I was going to say, as an Eagles fan, you almost want him to stay.
As an Eagles fan, I know that he had a little bit of a history with Jalen Hurts. So, you know, with our offensive coordinator and this offense that is just not functioning, I would keep my ears open at potentially, you know, being a little opportunistic here.
You know, I was about to mention that Joe Brady, the current Bills offense coordinator, is a name that has been mentioned for several different head coaching positions as we head into that coaching carousel season. So a return to Buffalo for Daboll isn't out of the question either, with Sean McDermott still the head coach there.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd be on board with that.
Well, some good news out of the NFL regarding the quarterback position, or at least good news for Bengals fans. Maybe bad news for me as a Ravens fan. Joe Burrow opens his 21-day window for return to practice. He is potentially targeting the Bengals Thanksgiving Day or Thanksgiving night game against the Baltimore Ravens. So that would certainly be an interesting wrinkle in the AFC North race. What do we do with Joe Flacco? What do we do with, obviously, Bengals skill position guys? You just said it and forget it, right? But Flacco, does this hurt his value for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think Flacco was a type of plug and play quarterback if you were, you know, in necessity of a spot start, right, in fantasy. So, I think if you had him, it's not like he had any significant trade value. This is just he's going to have the next few weeks and then he's going to turn to dust.
Yeah, this is one of the rare situations in which I'm glad that one of my higher buy-in leagues operates with team quarterback instead of individual quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. This is one of the rare situations where I support that decision.
That's interesting.
It adds a little bit of a wrinkle. Usually it doesn't make much difference, but it can add things. Basically, the rationale behind it was when quarterbacks get injured mid-game, it is basically an automatic loss with how quarterback heavy the scoring is in this league. So that was the rationale behind the change. I was lukewarm on it. I wasn't thrilled about it, but it's so far it's been fine. Like I said, it hasn't made much of a difference one way or the other. This is one of the rare situations where it might. Running back injuries, we have a handful of guys, some that are certainly more consequential than others. We'll start in Denver with maybe the biggest injury news. J.K. Dobbins is week to week with a foot injury. The Denver Broncos are considering IR. And this just opens the floodgates for R.J. Harvey. We think, I don't know, it's Sean Payton. Tyler Bidet is still there. Jaleel McLaughlin, I think, is still there. Audric Estime was released weeks ago, but who knows, he could make a return appearance. Are we obviously we're hoping that the Broncos turn this backfield over to Harvey, but you can never be too sure with Sean Payton.
That's right. I would think, and I have RJ Harvey in a few leagues, and I'm under the assumption that there would be a significant uptick in RJ Harvey's snap share and opportunities. But, you know, despite being an absolute liability on the field, Bidet seems to always make his way back onto the field. So I don't know if Payton just is dead set on his ways, but I'm going to operate under the presumption that RJ Harvey was already in close to a 50-50 split. And if that goes to 60-40, you know, that's an uptick that I think that he has he's got the skill set and the capabilities to really take good hold of that share.
Yeah, we've seen him be super explosive in the pass game, and hopefully he can retain that role, doesn't just kind of flip-flop to the early down Dobbins role, that he can retain some of that passing back share that he's held. But it's one of those things, man, where I just don't trust Sean Payton. Like, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, his track record would show that he is not trustworthy.
We'll move on to another backfield in New England. Finally, Travion Henderson breaks out, and partially because Terrell Jennings left that game with a knee injury. Jennings used primarily as the goal line back for the Patriots, and Henderson didn't give him the opportunity, ran in a couple from a long way away, so they didn't have to turn to Jennings.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's a situation that I feel is, you know, there's another one here on our show sheet with Chris Rodriguez is dealing with a shoulder injury. And I was talking to some of my friends and my brother about this, how I feel like Bill Kroski Merritt's one of the luckiest guys there is. And, you know, I think Travion Henderson's got a little bit of a parallel there with just sometimes you need some injury luck to really give you the opportunity to break out and, you know, get a foothold in the backfield. I think Travion, we saw it in the post or in the preseason. We saw it more in college. The draft capital was more indicative of it. So I feel a little bit more confident about Travion's ability to stay on the field than Bill's. But if Terrell Jennings continues to miss any time and I think Ramondre Stevenson might be questionable to return this week. So we'll see. We'll see if Ramondre becomes a little bit more of just a goal line back and if Travion continues to have a good share of the carries. But, you know, this was the breakout week that a lot of his managers were hoping for.
And we'll turn and look at turn back to the desert and look at Arizona once again with Bam Knight leaving the game with an ankle injury. Are we just kind of out on this Arizona backfield, or is there a guy here that you might be interested in deeper leagues?
In deeper leagues, I would be willing. I mean, if he's still out there, Michael Carter seems to be the remaining option. I don't think DeMercado has really shown anything to be a solidified option for them as a close to an every down back or an early down back. So that would be the option I would think in deeper leagues, but it would be a pretty short-term rental. I think Trey Benson's got to be close to coming back from his stint on IR, and none of these guys are really going to eat into Benson's share. I think Benson's going to be close to a bell cow.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I did scoop Benson off of a couple waiver wires over the past couple weeks, kind of stashed him. So if he could come back and be a starter and be a bell cow, that'd be huge, even if, you know, regardless of how bad the Cardinals schedule is moving forward.
Yeah, I think people forget how explosive he looked in his one or two games without James Conner. Like, he looked like he was going to have that league winner potential, and then he got hurt himself. But yeah, that's exciting.
And we'll move on to some pass catchers here. A couple of big names, Garrett Wilson with a knee and Davante Adams with what we're projecting as a back injury of some sort. Both of those guys are out for undisclosed time. I think Wilson came out and said 3 to 4 weeks. Adams is more of a question mark moving forward. The Jets, is there anybody left to catch passes in New York? And then in L.A., is it going to be the Puka show, or are we just going to run out 17 different tight ends again?
Yeah, LA seems to be the absolute keystone team of 13 personnel. They're running away with it, and you know, they got four options there, and all four of them can catch passes. You know, Puka's going to be the guy. They still have Whittington and some other receivers, but that rotation of tight end seems to be a mixed bag that you never know what you're going to get. And outside of Puka, there's probably not another pass catcher that I would feel reliable in my fantasy lineup. Garrett Wilson, that's a tough pill to swallow for the Jets. You know, they were a team that is probably still trying to, you know, rebuild, and in the way that Detroit was rebuilding, right, with Aaron Glenn. And it seems like Aaron Glenn is very, very adamant about sticking to the ground game. And, you know, they're one of the more run heavy teams in the league, and now they lose their number one wide receiver. I don't think that Justin Fields has shown really any growth in the passing game, and there's not a ton of volume there. So I had a lot of high hopes for Mason Taylor for even, you know, more value opportunities if they were going to be able to get into red zone opportunities if all things went well, but nothing is going well right now. So I'm pretty out.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll move on to a couple of rookie pass catchers. Travis Hunter, obviously we knew he had a significant knee injury. He had surgery this past week. He's officially out for the remainder of the season. And then in Monday Night Football, we saw that Matthew Golden was ruled out. He had a shoulder injury. You know, you lose Golden, and then the Packers in the game lose Romeo Doubs. He leaves with a chest injury of some sort, maybe a pectoral, not sure there. What's left in Green Bay now that Kraft, Doubs, and Golden are all out?
Yeah, so it seemed like Dontavian Wicks had a nice role within that kind of, you know, they're still missing Jaden Reed, who was hurt back in week one. So now without Tucker Kraft and Golden, I feel like Golden overlaps a little bit with Christian Watson in that kind of deep threat. But without Doubs, that's really, they had Bo Melton. They moved him to DB, and then they had to throw him back as a wide receiver. And it just seems like a total disaster right now. It seems to me like a lot of it is going to fall on the shoulders of Dontavian Wicks, but you know, there's a reason that he was kind of falling on the depth chart to start the year, right? Like, He had a problem with drops, and it seems like he still has a problem with drops. You know, he's a kind of shifty guy, but it's still a little not great at separating when he needs to. So, you know, there's going to be a nice target share there for him, but will it come to fruition? It seems to be a question mark.
Yeah, the Packers, I mean, we'll have to wait and see, right? Obviously, Christian Watson has been kind of that long-distance lottery ticket that still has yet to cash in. But Jordan Love is running out of options quickly.
Yeah. Number one option is Josh Jacobs.
Even in the passing game.
Yeah, actually, though.
looking at tight end, Arondé Gadsden, I think fantasy managers may have dodged a bullet there. Looked like some sort of hyperextension of the knee. We're now getting word that it might just be a bone, like some sort of bruise. So he's day-to-day. And then Dalton Kincaid is week-to-week with what looked like a hamstring strain. Could just be a little tweak. We'll have to wait and see with that timetable as well. Both of those guys are impact tight ends. They're kind of, you know, plug and play tight ends above that next rung of kind of streaming options. Where might you look if you're a fantasy manager with one of these guys?
Yeah. So it depends on who's available on waivers, because, you know, there's a chance that Juwan Johnson is still floating out there. And after the week that he just had, you know, we talked about him last week with Shaheed leaving the offense and where we thought those targets would go. Obviously, Olave was going to see a huge uptick, and he did. But Juwan Johnson took over that role that he had in the early part of the season. So that's a really exciting option that I would be hoping for to be on waivers.
Oh, we've got a few other injuries, not to skill position players, but that may indirectly impact their offense. On the offensive line, the Las Vegas Raiders lose Jackson Powers Johnson, one of their interior linemen, to an ankle injury. And then on Monday Night Football, we saw Packers center Elgton Jenkins and Eagles tackle Lane Johnson both leave those games. Johnson did eventually return, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him miss more time. His lower body injuries keep piling up.
Yeah, he's been banged up all year and just kind of keeps playing through it. And this seemed like one that was going to be a little bit more major and keep him out potentially a couple weeks. And next thing you know, he's back on the sidelines, and then the game's still close coming down the stretch, and he's back on the field. So, I mean, he's a warrior pushing through it, but, you know, he's definitely not 100%.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk guys whose stock has fallen and who we might have a couple more buy low opportunities around the league after this break. Welcome back to Ball Street QBless Stock Exchange. I'm Brett Ford here with Chris Helly. We're talking guys who may have underperformed the past couple of weeks, especially in week 10, who may present buy low opportunities heading into week 11. We're approaching the fantasy football trade deadline in some leagues. I know, you know, some leagues play with it going until, you know, a team is eliminated. You can trade up until you're eliminated. Some teams, you know, or some leagues back that off into, you know, week 10, week 11, week 12. So we're running out of time as far as moves that we can make with our league mates with trades. So let's talk about some guys whose stock may have fallen this week that fantasy managers may or may not want to jump on.
Yeah, so off the bat, we had on Thursday night, Denver Broncos, Bo Nix and Cortland Sutton. You know, there's a good video from Ben Solak that you shared in our Discord, Brett, of it really broke down Bo Nix's indecision and how much that kind of crippled his gameplay and really the whole passing game. So that's something that, you know, he's got to work through. And I think that, you know, when you look back to his rookie year last year, it seemed like Sean Payton kept the offense fairly simplistic as he was a rookie. And now, you know, he's trying to bring in some of those more complicated concepts, and Nix hasn't quite stepped up to the plate yet. So, you know, there's that kind of aspect that's drawing away from the pie as a whole. And then with Cortland Sutton, you're seeing more of Troy Franklin being schemed to be the first read target share. You know, he's kind of established himself as the number one when it comes to first read target share in the offense. So it really is a precarious situation for Cortland Sutton. where the quarterback's not playing great, the offense isn't fully clicking, and he's not really even the number one guy anymore.
Yeah, this is, I have been a Courtland Sutton stan all year long. He's on a decent percentage of my rosters. I have harped for him in the buy low section, and I think after this week, it's I'm not going to say it's time to move on, but I think he has very, very clearly been passed on his own depth chart by Troy Franklin as the wide receiver one. Now, of course, I say that, and they're going to feed him 12 targets next week, but maybe the reverse jinx is on, and I'm okay with it because he's still on my rosters and still in my starting lineups. But as of right now, I'm operating under the assumption that Courtland Sutton is wide receiver two in Denver. And based on what we've seen from Bo Nix, he cannot support two fantasy football relevant pass catchers.
No, and it's a weird situation with Sutton too, because I am also a believer in the talent, and he doesn't look to be any different of a player than he was in years past. It's just the opportunities haven't been going his way, and a lot of that is on the shoulders of Nix. So, you know, there's a chance that, you know, something starts to click here in the back half of the season. It took him the first third of last year to really figure things out at a simplistic level. So, you know, with these more complicated systems, it could be a little bit later in the season here, but he's going to have to kick it into gear for Sutton to get back to that threshold that we are used to. So, yeah, I think to your point, it's a little bit of just readjusting expectations for him.
Let's stick in that same game from Thursday night. Las Vegas Raiders tight end Brock Bowers. Why is he on the stock down list after he had such an amazing game in his first one back 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, so his snap share has not been quite the same level as it was last year. He hasn't hit 85% of snaps in any game this year, and that's something he did in all 10 of the last 10 games last year. And, you know, right at the trade deadline, the team got rid of Jacoby Myers, so that's just what people... First instinct is, oh my God, Brock Bowers to the moon. There's no one else there. He's going to get a gajillion targets. And in reality, all it does is simplify things for a defense. So the Raiders are really going to have to start reassessing what options they have and try to do some more creativity to get Bowers the ball. And it's going to make it a lot more difficult to hit for him to hit the same ceiling.
Yeah, for Las Vegas, I mean, if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm facing Las Vegas, you know, what am I telling my guys, right? There's one guy out there that can beat us, and we're not going to let him do it. Like, make sure you know where 89 is. We're going to bracket him every snap, and, like, we're just going to make his life difficult and make someone else beat us because I don't think they can. So until we see, you know, Trey Tucker, Jack Betch, Deontay Thornton, step up, Michael Mayer, maybe, I don't know. The run game, Ashton Jeanty, until we see somebody make some game breaking plays and actually, you know, be impactful on that Raiders offense outside of Bowers, it could be some tough sledding for the tight end.
Yeah. And with the injuries to O-line, I think schedule is going to be hard coming down the stretch here. Like, things are not looking good for Las Vegas. And if I was a Bowers owner in a redraft league, I'd be looking to, you know, pivot away to another option that I feel has probably about the same level of safety. You know, you'd think that Bowers has a certain level ceiling, so maybe readjust your expectation there. You know, do a little bit of a lateral or even a step down to get another piece that you need. Running backs are going to be extremely valuable coming down the stretch here.
How far down are we dropping Bowers? Like, are we talking like Dallas Goedert territory? Are we talking maybe not that far, like Dalton Kincaid territory?
Honestly, either of those options, because both of those guys on like any given week are probably in the 8 to 12 point range, which is really all you need from your tight end slot. To like, tight ends really aren't going to win a league, you know, unless you really have a solid roster built through the rest of your lineup. A tight end is somewhere where you can kind of go for a discount and make sure that you have a really stout roster in your main positions, running back and wide receiver. So yeah, I would absolutely consider taking a step back. You know, I think Dallas Goedert is a perfect example of, it seems like he's just a relatively safe, consistent, you know, 5-6 targets a game. he'll get you 10, 12 points, and that's really all you need. Maybe a touchdown to put you over the top there, and I'm fine with that.
I was going to say, if he gets one of those weird underhand shovel passes near the goal line, he could just fall forward for a touchdown. We've seen that several times this year, and until Petullo is not the OC anymore, that's not going anywhere.
Absolutely. It's a lot easier to kind of like feel like you have a lesser option at tight end, but you know, you feel a lot better when they hit that 15 to 20 point threshold. You're like, hey, he actually did something. Than to have one of those stud guys that you're like, I need 20 points for him because that's what I drafted him to be.
Well, that, and you probably, assuming that you use that kind of draft capital on a tight end, you probably have, a slight deficit at skill players than other teams, right? Like your running back and wide receiver isn't as stacked in theory as some of your opponents who may have waited. So I'm with you there. I love that roster build strategy and have used it in several places. To be completely fair, I do have a couple shares of Trey McBride. Very happy with that. But a lot of places I'm shuffling and streaming tight ends. I've got Mark Andrews off the waiver wire and shipped him out after a couple good games, and now I'm regretting it. I've got Dallas Goedert off the waiver wire. I've got Harold Fannin, off the waiver wire in some places. So there's guys out there who can, like you said, hit that 12 to 15 point threshold for a way lower price, and you don't feel like they're completely letting you down when it happens.
Yep, exactly. It's always, reassess. You look at your roster and you're like, okay, where is my weakest position? You have a inherent value at a position, and you can really see if I am in need somewhere else. I can kind of readjust this asset that I have. And, I am generally on the side of, if you have a 2-to-1 trade, I would rather have the 1 than the 2, because usually you want the more desirable asset in the trade. But from a roster building perspective, I think tight end's one that you can go the other way and be better off for it.
Excellent. Let's move on to our next stock down player. That's Minnesota Vikings running back Jordan Mason. It's just, I think the Jordan Mason experience might have hit its end. It was amazing for the early run of the season, and he just looked like a different player in the first 6-7 weeks than he has in the past 3 or 4.
Yeah, there were some injuries to the O-line that really kind of clogged up the production there from him. And, they played an international game, and, things really just fell off the rails with Carson Wentz at quarterback too. So, the hope of him getting that bell cow role was so exciting when the opportunity arose, and it feels like it just slipped through our fingers here. It might still exist, but that's pretty much all he is at this point. It's just a handcuff while Aaron Jones is back to borderline bell cow usage.
Well, that and the fact that, the Vikings are playing from behind so much, right? Like, they're going to be using Aaron Jones in pass heavy game scripts. So unless the Vikings are playing a team like, the Raiders, I don't know what their schedule is off the top of my head, but in matchups where it's going to be either competitive or they're going to be trailing, it's going to be a lot of Aaron Jones.
Yep, for sure.
Well, let's stay in that division, the NFC North, and move to Chicago, where for the second straight week, the Bears had a receiver, one of their starting receivers, put up a big fat zero. Thankfully, it wasn't Romeo Odunze this time. It was DJ Moore on the other side of the formation. What are some of the factors that led to Moore's big fat zero?
Yeah, I mean, we had talked about it too, where we saw this offense. It's got a lot of skill position players that are going to need to be involved. So when there's a lot of mouths to feed, someone's going to get left behind. It was Rome last week, and it was DJ Moore this week. There are a few opportunities for him there, but I think one of the biggest things that we're seeing is Luther Burden's snap share is starting to slowly climb and climb. This was something that I think if Colson Loveland wasn't too banged up to start the year, we would have seen him be involved in the offense sooner in the season. So now when you have both of these rookies starting to carve out some more field time, some of the vets are starting to take a little bit of a backseat while the coaching staff is really assessing all the options that they have. DJ Moore's role in the offense, and you know, Olamide Zaccheaus too. Like, you know, these guys are really coming out of the woodworks here, and Ben Johnson is an offensive mastermind that can work with whatever ingredients you give him. So this was something that scared me away from a lot of the Bears position, skill position players in draft season. And that's just the fact of the matter. There's a lot of mouths to feed.
Yeah. And I think, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but I think the emergence of Kyle Menangai might have affected DJ Moore as well. Like, you're not going to see any DJ Moore handoffs now. Like, he's RB3, you know, he's no longer the gadget guy. The floor is lower than it was. And oh, by the way, there's a bunch of emerging pass catchers surrounding him. I'm 100% with you. There's a lot of mouths to feed there. I don't know if Moore is one of the top two receivers in that receiving core. I think Luther Burden might be the best receiver on that team once he figures things out. I know that's a little bit of a hot take, but he's really good at football and needs to be more involved. I think we saw that a little bit this week. I think we're going to continue to see that down the stretch. So he's one of the guys that I'm targeting on waivers in a lot of places, and I'm targeting as a buy low in other places.
Yeah, he's exciting. I loved his pre-draft profile. I watched a good bit of him in college, and he's exciting. And I thought this was a really fun landing spot for him. And it was really interesting that it had taken this long through the year for him to really start to see some snap share. But, you know, that I think he's got that type of, you know, where the volume's not there, he's get valuable through just explosive plays. Like, he's that type of guy.
Well, we'll talk about a couple other buy low opportunities. You have a couple really interesting names on this sheet, and I'm very on board with the both of them. Talk to me about the two guys you have here.
Yeah, so the first one is Michael Pittman. You know, he was actually on a tear to start the year. And, you know, the Colts offense has kind of hit a stumble here the last few weeks. And I think there's a really good buy window for him to get him at a slightly cheaper cost than you would have maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. The Colts have a bye this week. And then, you know, if you're looking at a team who's potentially on the bubble of making your fantasy playoffs, you got a week 11 bye, and then they play at Kansas City and then Houston. So there's a team that might be looking at that schedule and be a little concerned that he's going to be reliable over the next few weeks. But after that, things should open back up. And, you know, he's been battling a glute injury that I think people haven't really noticed because it's been, you know, early week on the injury report, and then he's fine and good to go by the time the weekend comes. But you know, he is, you know, probably the number one receiving option outside of Tyler Warren. And Tyler Warren is, you know, a very explosive option, but I want the outside receiver who's going to be getting a lot of touchdowns. And Pittman was the guy that was doing that for the early part of the season.
Does Daniel Jones's poor play or his seeming infatuation with Alec Pierce, do either of those things concern you about Pittman?
Not at all. I don't think that this last few weeks has been a full stumble of Daniel Jones where he's going to fall off the rails entirely. I think it's been a tough matchup and an international game. And, you know, those type of things happen. There's ebbs and flows in the season. I think if Daniel Jones is on the pace that he was to start the year throughout the entire year, you know, that would be a full, you know, Sam Darnold-esque, you know, resurgence of the career. And that's, and I think he still has that, but I'm not faulting him for a couple bad games.
Yeah, I do think that this week 11 bye is coming at the right time. Give him an extra week to A, recover from the international game, like you said, and B, prepare for a Steve Spagnuolo defense. I think this is a great time for the bye. And like you said, once playoffs rolls around, man, playoffs in week 14, 15, 16, the Colts schedule lightens up quite a bit, and I'm very excited to maybe even buy low on Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Jones is another option where, you know, if you had punted QB in the draft and you've been streaming your way through the season, he, you know, he has been a very solid fantasy asset that you could get for almost nothing. I mean, like, you could get him for especially in one QB leagues, the trade value for a team that has two startable quarterbacks is a lot lesser, where you can trade a almost a flex level guy, maybe even like a solid bench player to a flex level guy to get a QB2 like Daniel Jones.
Excellent. We'll move on to the other name that you have on here. It's in the Buffalo backfield. We've talked about him as actually a sell high recently, but it shows you just how much the market fluctuates in fantasy football. Now he's on the buy low list. It's James Cook.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's been on the sell list because we were kind of concerned about the workload and the stretch of the schedule that we've been seeing. And, you know, that came to fruition. And for the last five games, he hasn't hit 15 points in PPR. You know, kind of sandwich in the middle of that was his 30-point explosion game set. That makes his buy time right now, like, you know, he is seen as a very high-end RB1, but I think this has suppressed him down to a little bit more of a palatable buy price where, you know, if you are really struggling and you need an RB1 and you have multiple wide receivers, you could make a deal for him for a slightly cheaper cost than you could in those prior weeks. You know, this past week he had a 50% snap share, which is, I think, more of a factor of game script because, you know, Bills were behind, they're in Miami, they're in a pass heavy game script, and we saw a lot of Ty Johnson. And I don't think that's the way that this offense wants to run. I think they didn't travel very well. They weren't very prepared. They got punched in the mouth and were just kind of picking up all the beans that they dropped on the floor and were just kind of scrambling through that game. They're going to want to bounce back hard. And James Cook is the RB1 of a team that I think is going to be that high power offense.
Excellent. I completely agree with you. And, you know, Buffalo wants to run the ball, and after this loss, they're going to want to get back into the win column, and no better way to do that than the handball to James Cook.
Absolutely. And if like their manager might be looking at the upcoming schedule too. They play Tampa Bay, Houston, and Pittsburgh, both Houston and Pittsburgh on the road. That could strike a little bit of fear. You know, you haven't been getting quite as good returns from him, and an upcoming schedule that looks a little tough. They could be looking to cash out, and I'm in.
Pittsburgh is a sneaky good matchup for running backs this year. Don't let the terrible towels fool you. The Steelers have let up. They've been pretty leaky against the run relatively consistently, which is way, way antithetical to their typical MO. So don't let that one scare you.
Yeah, the age is poking through.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk guys whose stocks have risen and who we might be selling high on after this. Welcome back to Ball Street, the QBL stock exchange. Buy low, sell high. That's business on Ball Street. While we've got you here, make sure you check out QBList.com. One of the columns that both Chris and I work on a weekly basis is what we saw. It's kind of the flagship content of QBList. What we saw is your weekly shortcut to smarter fantasy football decisions. The QBList team of analysts watches every NFL game and goes beyond the box score to deliver the most important observations, giving you actionable contextual insights that shape your next lineup move, which is extremely important as we prepare for the playoffs. Make sure to check us out on QBList.com and in the fantasy football subreddit every Monday morning, where all of our analysts are answering your questions throughout the day. Don't forget all of our weekly web content, including Start Sit column, weekly rankings. Our guys have been in the top 10 rankings for several weeks on fantasy pros across the industry. We've expanded the QBL podcast network. Jay does a great job with Sunday Best. Brian, Mario, and Nick do a great job on their waiver wire and weekly forecast shows. And of course, you're here with us on Ball Street. Make sure to check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/theQBList, where we're posting all of our podcast recordings. And follow us on TikTok at QB_list. Jay's always doing a great job chopping up YouTube shorts, giving you fun, entertaining content on there as well. Chris, we're talking stock up, guys who had good weeks, whose stocks have risen, and then we'll get into some that we don't necessarily buy in, we're going to be selling high on. So let's talk guys who had really good weeks. Let's start a quarterback. You got Baker Mayfield from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on this list. What's going on in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, Baker was seen as a potential MVP candidate, and he had a few off weeks before the bye. And, you know, he's right back to old Baker. You know, Ekbuka popped, Tez Johnson popped. Cade Otton looked great. You know, he's, instead of calling him a kingmaker, he's an MVP maker, Tez Johnson would think. He just balls out. And, you know, this is an offense that's going to be getting Bucky Irving back at some point. He looks great, and he seems to be doing everything he can with everyone he's got.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, he was in the MVP race before, and I'll be honest, he could play himself into it again if he continues to do what he's done, especially with the injuries in his receiving core. Chris Godwin, Mike Evans have missed significant time. Evans might be back by the end of the year. We'll see. Baker's balling out.
Yeah, if they get Evans back before the end of the year, I mean, that offense would be tough to stop for sure.
Now, speaking of tough to stop, we had a guy who we did a complete about face on. He was in our stock down section last week for good reason. And then, of course, the breakout came. Hopefully you bought low because the window is shut violently. That's the New England Patriots running back, Travion Henderson. Travion popped off with two long touchdown runs and looked really, really good in the Patriots victory. Talk to me about Travion.
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit at the start of the pod. He's, you know, very explosive. He's a great runner. And it seems like all it needed for him to really solidify himself in the backfield was a big game like this. It's also really satisfying for any managers that, you know, as he was halfway down the field for his second touchdown run, he looked back at the sidelines and the coaches gave him the okay to go ahead and hit the pay dirt instead of trying to slide before the end zone. So you're feeling good about that. You feel good that the coaching staff is willing to support him in his big game. They're not just telling him to hit the deck and walk away with the easy win there. So, you know, it's good to see that the coaching staff and the team is all on board, and that he's finally had that breakout game that, you know, it took, you know, a little bit of luck with other guys getting out of the way for him to have the opportunity. But it was either going to be last week or this week. And after it didn't happen last week, we were a little afraid if the opportunity would ever exist again. Second time's a charm.
We'll see if he can maintain his spot atop that depth chart with Ramondre Stevenson potentially coming back and with the Patriots coaching staff just not liking him, I guess. I don't know. Just with their baffling decision-making early in the season, we'll see how things go as Stevenson gets back to health. We'll move on to New Orleans, where Chris Olave had a massive game. Tyler Shuck found him for 104 yards and a score. Olave is quietly having a really good year. He's one of those sneaky guys that you would never think of him as a top 15 wide receiver, but I'm pretty sure he's having a top 15 wide receiver season. Let me just dive into the ranks here.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got the talent, and I think the only drawback from him from a fantasy standpoint is really a two-headed drawback, actually, has been quarterback play and his health and whether he can stay on the field. At the start of the year, we weren't sure if it was going to be Shuck or Rattler. We weren't sure if, you know, with his concussion history, how much he was going to be able to stay on the field, and that kind of suppressed his draft price. Rattler wasn't great through the start of the year, and, you know, Shuck's taken over, and Shuck looks great. He looks absolutely capable to run this offense. And Olave, you know, he hasn't had any, you know, head injuries, big falls, nothing like that yet. So fingers crossed for everyone's sake that stays the same, right? But, you know, he's making those flash plays, the one-handed grabs and toe-touching catches on the sideline. You know, he's got the talent, and the opportunity has really paved its way here.
Yeah, Olave, wide receiver 13 in fantasy points per game in PPR formats so far this year. Not a name that I expected to see in the top 15, but yeah, like you said, he's been excellent. And without Shaheed, could be even better after the bye.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty much him, Juwan Johnson, and maybe, what, a sprinkle of Devon Bailey?
And Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always there. That's the only problem with New Orleans is like Taysom Hill is always there, whether he's throwing it, whether he's catching it, whether he's running it, is always in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
How about Brian Robinson Jr. finally getting some action in San Francisco after being dealt there in the preseason? Gave CMC a little bit of a breather this week. He led the Niners in rushing and scored a touchdown. Talk to me about Brian Robinson.
Yeah, so this is another situation where I think when a running back changes teams, you have to really understand what their skill set is. And, you know, I never thought of Brian Robinson Jr. as a more explosive back that can really be a three-down back in any type of backfield. But when he left Washington and came over to San Francisco, I thought the running scheme fit a little bit better in San Francisco for his play style. And, you know, it's taken him a little bit of time here. But, you know, Christian McCaffrey's numbers on the ground have not been good this year. I think he's averaging 3.7 yards a carry. And Brian Robinson has been the more efficient runner on the ground. So, you know, CMC is not going anywhere. He's going to keep getting, 15 targets a game or something ridiculous. But Brian Robinson might be the early down and, you know, maybe the leader, rushing leader as far as pure carries go.
Yeah, I'm curious to see really two things is if Brock Purdy comes back and how the offense changes when Brock Purdy comes back. You know, do opposing defenses stop, you know, stacking the box as much as they are? Does it open up the running lanes for McCaffrey and Robinson more? And do they just stick with Mac Jones and keep doing what they're doing and winning football games for the most part? Not this past week, but, you know, Mac Jones has been serviceable as a starting QB, and I wouldn't be shocked if Shanahan just said, hey, let's just roll with this for this season. Let Brock get healthy or whatever, kind of have like a Kyler situation in San Francisco. But, you know, if they do change back to Brock Purdy, it'll be interesting to see how that changes the whole offensive environment and defensive environment for the 49ers opponents.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably a situation where, you know, there's not going to be any real pressure to swap Purdy back in. They'll let Mac Jones keep the reins for at least another week until they, you know, if they lose a game, if they drop a bad one to Seattle, then yeah, maybe they throw Purdy back in at that point. But, you know, if Mac is playing well and if they are winning, that seems like if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
We'll move on to some guys who have spiked in production, may not be sustainable, or at least we don't believe to be sustainable in our sell high section. Chris, where are you looking when we talk about sell highs?
Yeah, I think, you know, a perfect example is Breece Hall. You know, he had a big game this past week, but a lot of that production was really just off of one 40-yard receiving touchdown. And we talked about the Jets earlier and that it seems like an offense that, you know, it might be pretty run heavy and those opportunities are going to be there, but how much faith do we have in it being productive of any kind? How much time are they going to be able to stay on the field? It's not like their defense is going to be forcing a lot of three and outs and getting the offense back out there. Maybe the defense is going to be so bad that offenses score so quickly that, you know, but then they'll be playing from behind. So, you know, I think Breece Hall's definitely a sell high situation where, I'd be kind of similar to what we were saying with the tight end situation where I'd be willing to take a little bit of a step down at my RB2 potentially if I'm in need at wide receiver or trying to upgrade it to, let's say, quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, Hall's fantasy performance last week at least was smoke and mirrors. We'll see how the Jets move forward, but this feels very similar to Brock Bowers, right? In that Hall is kind of the last man standing in this Jets offense. Obviously Fields is a little bit more of a running threat than Geno Smith, but I mean, if I'm looking at the Jets offense, I'm saying, okay, who are we not going to let beat us as a defensive coordinator? It's Breece Hall. So, you know, I'm stacking the box. I'm forcing Justin Fields to throw it. Which has been a pretty successful defensive scheme against the Jets this season.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll move on to your next name on this list, and that's Chicago Bears running back DeAndre Swift. Swift, after missing 2 weeks ago when Menangai went off, he came back. He got really the lion's share of the running back snaps. Now, granted, Chicago was trailing for most of the game to the Giants. I did what we saw in that game. It felt game scripts dependent as far as Swift's usage, especially in the second half. So I can completely see why he's on sell high. I think that his, whatever it was, 65%, 70% usage was a little bit deceptive. And I think Menangai can have a larger role moving forward. What are your thoughts on Swift?
Yeah, I agree that I think the game kind of played in his favor. And I think Menangai is not going to go anywhere. I think this was probably, you know, the scale tipped back pretty quick, which was exciting. If you were a Swift owner, you were happy that, you know, it's not completely 50-50 workload with Menangai, at least not yet. But, you know, it could be in the upcoming weeks. And I think the biggest factor for me is that the schedule's about to get insane as far as run defenses go. They got Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Philly, Green Bay, Cleveland, Green Bay, San Francisco, Detroit. That's their gauntlet of run defenses down the stretch here. It's a benefit that he's a pass catching back, and that might keep him with a slight nod over Menangai. But, you know, looking at that upcoming schedule, I would prefer to have a different option at my running back position going into fantasy playoffs.
Absolutely agree with you. The only place where I might not sell high on him is PPR, just because he does have some of that pass game prowess. But it's another, you know, we talked about how many mouths to feed there are in Chicago. So relying on him for pass game production might not be completely viable every week either.
Yeah, exactly.
We got one more name on the sell high. I'll let you talk about this one because you wrote up this game last week.
Yeah, and this one hurts me a little bit to throw out there, but my sell high is Devontae Smith, the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, he's had, I think he's outproduced A.J. Brown in fantasy points in 7 of the 9 games. It seems like he might be the new wide receiver one in Philly. But, you know, Philly's situation right now for me is very precarious. It seems like Hurts is giving some preferential treatment toward looking Devontae's way. And there's, I think, a little bit of a microcosm of maybe what we might see across the season within the game with Green Bay last week, where AJ had a target early in the game, and then he kind of faded away for most of the game until that really odd decision to go for it on 4th and 5 on Green Bay's, you know, 40, 35 yard line, whatever it was. Don't love that decision, but I'll put a pin in that. But that's when AJ, they tried to take a shot on him because they thought maybe, you know, they wouldn't expect it to go his way. When you have an offense that has a bunch of weapons like this, I think it gives a little bit of versatility and taking advantage of what the defense gives you. And I think through the middle part of the season here, because it's been going to Goddard and Devontae Smith and obviously to Saquon, that, you know, if we're slowly seeing that, even though AJ's still running a lot of those decoy routes and still having a little bit of pull on the secondary, that, you know, defenses might try to, you know, take swings at those one-on-ones with AJ, and I think they're going to get beat on it. And with Smitty constantly being, you know, the deep threat and the outlet valve for Hurts, you know, he might be the center of attention down the stretch here. And that's not even accounting for the fact that this offense is leading the league in 3-and-out rates. So the volume and consistency of the offense as a whole is also just a really awkward situation. So I think there's a few things here where, you know, you look at, and we'd mentioned Breece Hall is this reliable production? And it seems like Devontae Smith keeps managing to bring down those, you know, 40 yard touchdown catches. But if you're relying on that every week, it feels like, you know, you could probably get a lot of value off of where people are thinking that production is worth.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it makes sense to sell high on the Eagles pass game right now. I can't get past, I don't trust Kevin Petullo. I don't think he's a very good offensive coordinator. And I just think he's done the Eagles a disservice, frankly. they just aren't the same explosive offense that we've seen previously.
Nope. It is extremely frustrating. I think I saw a stat where the Eagles lead, not just this year, but I think it's like the past 7 years in three and out rate at like a above a 40% clip of drives going three and out, which is just, you see it on the field and you just feel it, and it's inexcusable.
Yeah, I can only imagine as what you must be going through as an Eagles fan watching that. So I'll leave that there. We move on to our buy high and hold section. If there's one player across the fantasy football landscape that you are absolutely not selling high on, who is it and why?
Yeah, so I think running backs are going to be oh so valuable coming down the stretch of the fantasy season in the playoffs. And this guy was a league winner last year, and I think he's got that same potential this year. And that's Chase Brown of the Bengals. You got Joe Burrow coming back in a few weeks, but even without Burrow, with Flacco back at the helm, Chase Brown was a top five fantasy running back in four of his last five games before the bye. So, you know, the schedule's going to get a little bit lighter. You're going to get Burrow back, and, you know, he's already had that uptick in production. I think he's going to be RB1, high-end RB1 level production to cruise on home.
Yeah, I'm with you. I missed Chase Brown. I was out on him pre-draft season, and now I'm starting to regret it. And of course, nobody's going to trade him to me because he's, you know, in a really good spot. So I'm kind of out of the Chase Brown sweepstakes this year. So I'm just going to have to grit my teeth and hope that he doesn't beat me.
Yeah, I got a few leagues where I got Kyren or maybe, you know, some other level like RB1s that I would much rather have Chase Brown, and it sounds crazy, you know, with how well that Kyren's been producing, but I think Kyren's a situation that I could probably upgrade in my mind to Chase Brown, that I think someone else might see that as a pretty close to even swap.
I'll give you the one guy that I'm holding high on everywhere, and I'm extremely proud of this because he was one of my buy lows early in the season. And that's Los Angeles Chargers wide receiver Ladd McConkey. I felt really silly trading for him in week two, and then he goes out in week three and catches one target or one reception for, I think it was maybe 11 yards. But since then, it's been smooth sailing for the most part. With how bad McConkey was for the first couple of weeks, he still ranks seventh, tied for seventh among wide receivers across the NFL with 80 targets through 10 weeks. So I'm thrilled with where I'm at with Ladd. He's caught touchdowns in four of his last six games. He's looked way more in sync with Justin Herbert over the past several games. He's, of course, going to get that target volume that he's always gotten. It's just that now he's in lockstep with his quarterback. He missed some time in the preseason. They were able to get some more reps as the season went along, and now they're finally back on the same page. They're clicking on full cylinders. And, oh, by the way, the Chargers are starting to phase out old man Keenan Allen finally. Give the man his flowers. He's the Chargers' leading franchise leader in receptions, which is awesome. Love Keenan Allen. He's been great for fantasy in years past. But I don't need the ghost of fantasy football past. I need the ghost of fantasy football present. Ladd McConkey, he's my guy, and I'm very excited to have him in several spots after the rough start.
Yeah, ghost of fantasy football present and future. This guy is... I think he's reliable. I love him. He's so talented. I think he's proof of, you know, how well do you know the receiving position? You know, he seems like he's one of the smoothest route runners out there. I think a discount comparison is I kind of view him a little like Jamar Chase in the way that he comes in and out of his breaks. It's just so fluid. Like it doesn't look like he's like, you know, that type of twitchy wide receiver and he's going to have those contested grabs. He's just, everything he does is full speed, and you know he's got that yards after catch ability that turns those, you know, 5-10 yard routes into home run hitters. He's so much fun to watch, and I'm fully on board with this one.
I will say he looked slow after the catch on the one up the left sideline that I thought he broke free from his defender, caught it right in his chest, broke free from the defender. And I was like, oh yeah, man, he's gone. And like three linebackers caught him. I was like, lad, that was slow. But other than that, man, I have no complaints.
Yeah, I did say a discount Jamar Chase. So
he's quick. He's not fast. He's quick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, that does it for Ball Street, the QBL stock exchange. Chris, before we go, tell the people where they can find you and your work.
Yes, all my work is on QBList.com. I support our What We Saw series. I'm on Twitter at ChrisHellyQBL. I'll be on our Reddit post for our What We Saw posts, and I'm very active in our Discord.
Excellent. My name is Brett Ford. As always, you can find me on Twitter at FadeThatMan. QBList.com, What We Saw column, we're all over it every week. We watch every snap, so you don't have to. And we tell you all about what we saw. We went over that earlier. I'm also very active in the QBList Discord. All of our analysts, our whole team is super accessible. You can chop it up with us anytime in the Discord or on the fantasy football subreddit on Monday mornings. We're always there to answer questions, there to help in any way we can. It's a great community. I'm proud to be a part of it, and I really love what we're building here at QBList.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, a lot of good insights, a lot of good perspectives.
Excellent. Well, that does it for another week of Ball Street. For Chris, I'm Brett. We will see you later.